It's time for another Internet Advisor Show podcast. Since 1998, we've been helping computer users get on the Internet, get around it, and get over the problems they encounter there. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour weekly radio program heard on WJR 760 AM in Detroit since 1998 and across the state of Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor podcast.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome aboard. Hi, this is Foster Brown, the co-host of the Internet Advisor, now in our 16th year of broadcasting throughout Michigan. We're delighted to be with you today, and we have got a jam-packed program. We're going to be talking about the president's order on cybersecurity. We'll be talking about your security, a new piece of software for your phones called Bump that may replace your thumb drives. Just some of the things we'll talk about in this first of 3 hours. And once again, welcome to the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown, co-host of this merry band here on this very snowy February day. And may I just say right at the outset, wherever you are, please take your time getting where you can. And if you can, stay off the roads here in Southeast Michigan for a while. For those of you who are listening to us live on our flagship station, WJR in Detroit, it is treacherous outside. And I'm very glad that my co-host here, Ed Rudell, possesses four-wheel drive on his Jeep.
I love my Jeep.
Oh, was it? As we were driving here, folks, we were about 5 minutes away when all of a sudden there was a little bit of a fishtail, yeah. And we weren't going very fast. And we said, oops, and he popped it into four-wheel drive, so we got here. And I'm very glad we got here safely, too. So please, folks, take your time out there. It is a very nasty situation on the highway. Some of our major highways have been shut down because of accidents. And you can stay tuned here at 760 AM for more information during the news breaks on what's up there. Eddie, good to have you here today. Gary will be showing up shortly,
weather permitting. No, it's great to be here. You know, I was working on the cars this morning, you know, it was a balmy 10, 12 degrees up there and outside. My wife comes outdoors. How can you work on the cars? That's what I do. I fix things. I don't have any computers to work on, so I'm going to work on the cars. Got to be a, you know, what is it? A master of none, you know, jack of all trades, master of none.
Now you do all things well. Ed, yeah. By the way, is one of our tech experts here. And he, along with Cal Carson and Shane Hamlin and Gary Baker and I, helped to answer questions. That's going to be going on in our third hour today. We actually have 3 hours. So we've got lots of room here. And as a matter of fact, what I'd like to do is introduce somebody who is going to be part of this next few segments in our program. And that is Richard Steenan, who is a cybersecurity expert. He's also somebody who's been involved in watching the digital industry for a long time as a Gartner analyst, and he's written a book, as a matter of fact, called Up and to the Right about influencing that area. But Richard, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Foster. Great to talk to you once again.
Yeah, and I understand you're up in the, are you in the snow capital up there of Mackinac City?
No, I drove back yesterday, so there was a lot of snow up there.
There's a lot of snow up there, and it, apparently it followed you back down.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, we're going to be talking about a number of things in this first segment of our first hour here, but one of the things I thought we could dive into pretty quickly was that during the State of the Union speech earlier on this week, President Obama made some pretty strong statements about cybersecurity, and there was something I need your help to help all the rest of us understand. There was a presidential policy directive, 21 to be exact, that was put out about cybersecurity. So, Rich, could you explain to us and to the audience what that was about?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it was a big week for the White House. They not only issued a new policy directive, which is a little higher level than the executive order that they issued on cybersecurity in critical infrastructure. And the policy directive was actually a rehash of something that the Bush administration put out in 2003, which was called the Homeland Security Policy Directive number 7. Mm-hmm. It's a very lengthy, but it lays out exactly what responsibility each federal agency and department has for protecting critical infrastructure. And it's very broad because it's protecting it against all hazards. So it,
wow.
In my mind, it lays this net over the entire federal government and creates a reporting infrastructure and, you know, passing the information and creating not only cyber but physical security measures.
No,
and
just,
this version now calls for the creation of two security, infrastructure security centers, which are going to be responsible for collecting data about threats.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the cyber side of it extremely well. The physical side, of course, is the usual, terrorists or lone actors that are targeting, nuclear plants, et cetera.
Okay.
And then somehow they're going to work together and share information back and forth, and everybody's going to be sharing information.
Now, that is the key, isn't it? I mean, the sharing of information. And, Gary, you had something you were going to chime in with.
Yeah, I was just wondering how we're going to share with the state, because the state's doing some things in this area, too.
Yeah, and, there's been a little snafu in issuing these broad, proclamations, essentially, and that state is left out of it. For the most part, the CNCI, the Comprehensive National Cybersecurity Initiative, that Bush put in place, left state out completely. So now both the new policy directive and the executive order kind of have this tagged on language to include state, local, territories, and tribal infrastructures.
Native American tribal structures as well. Ed, go ahead.
Well, the first thing I thought of when Gary asked the question about state is that we have 50 states in this union, and do you really want 50 different types of inventions to, 50 different ways of protecting yourself? It seems like you should have a larger body to set standards and sharing that information and cooperating with the individual states.
Yeah, well, obviously, Congress has let us down because the first instance of this was the breach security laws. So now 43 out of 50 states have passed laws making it a requirement to notify the victims of a breach, so credit card or banking breach.
Let me back up for just a second, Rich. Excuse me, just a second to back up for our listeners who may be getting a little confused with what we're talking about. Essentially, is that they're trying to build a structure that will help everybody share information about security breaches, et cetera. Now, I want to get back to this when we come back after a break in just a moment. Rich Estina's with us here. We're talking with him about the president's directive that came out about cybersecurity. What it practically means to us. Are we going to be safer, or does this mean more bureaucracy? Rich Estina with us, Gary Baker and Ed Riddell, Foster Brown here. We'll be back in just a minute to continue talking about this important subject. It used to be when you talked about cybersecurity that people's eyes would roll back in their heads and kind of say, oh, this is way beyond me. But I think we're down to the place right now where grandma and grandpa understand the whole notion of security, because they may have had an email account that's been hacked. Just this week, three or four people that I know, I got the telltale, single link in an email, which is usually the telltale sign that somebody's been hacked. And so security is something we're all more and more aware of. This week, the State of the Union with President Obama seemed to say that the federal government is coming in here to throw a big net over this whole thing and kind of organize it. With us right now is Richard Steenen, who's a frequent guest here talking about security. And I should say that Richard's not only been in this field for a long time, but internationally. Richard, you are a consultant to major businesses and I think governments as well on the whole notion of cybersecurity. Just to give a little perspective here, am I right?
Yeah, absolutely, because this is a global problem.
It's a global problem. Now, part of the issue, and Gary brought this up just in the last segment, is that one of the things is that when these first problems began to happen, when there were breaches, when information was stolen, that the states stepped in early in the last decade and started coming up with their laws. Now, 43...
Well, because the federal government didn't.
Yes, exactly.
And so, therefore, the states had to. And the problem is the compliance for notification. If there is a breach, if you have, if you have customers in different states, you have to comply with different laws, right, Richard?
Yes. Every single state that you have a customer in, you have to comply with their breach laws.
So it's maddening. Let's see, I own a credit card company, and I have customers in 42 of those states. I got to find out what the rules are for each one of them.
And if you get a breach, you want to notify those people
as soon as possible,
as fast as you can.
Yeah.
But you can't because you have different rules and regulations, different types of different ways that you have to go about notifying. You have to notify the attorneys general in certain states first before you notify the citizens of those states. Richard, it's a mess out there.
Yeah, and you know who's got all that data ready to go to do the notification.
Right. So, are we in a better place now than we were before President Obama made the Presidential Policy Directive 21?
We're not yet, because both the policy directive and the accompanying executive order have time frames associated with them that stretch out, you know, 1 year and 2 years before anything actually happens. And you know, unfortunately, the same things were called for 7 years ago from the original policy directive.
Wow.
So I think the only way that we're better off today than we were 7 years ago is the understanding of the problem
is a
little more visceral.
How do companies then, Gary, you work for a company with the Society of Manufacturing Engineers as an IT director there. How does a company, and Rich, maybe your perspective from the government, how do we ever effectively protect ourselves then if there is this horrible muddle going on?
Yeah, and the good news is that companies have it figured out, and there's some on the bleeding edge, you know, in particular in the defense industrial base that have been under such targeted attack for over a decade, that they figured it out. You know, so they've been able to evolve with the threat. Other companies are just learning that, oh my gosh, they're totally compromised by, you know, foreign nationals in their systems, and they're getting up to speed. And they'll, you know, in my mind, they'll get up to speed a lot faster than the federal government.
Well, how about the infrastructure? You mentioned that. Now, folks, infrastructure is our lights, it's our water, it's the gas supply lines, et cetera. Are we, I mean, you talked about private companies, like Gary's concern, for instance, being pretty well protected. How about them? I mean, we all drink the water and, you know, use electricity. Are we fairly safe there?
Unfortunately not, because, you know, the public utilities, oil and gas, you know, line companies that manage those are actually pretty far behind in adapting technology and computers. They don't have large IT staffs.
Yeah.
So they've got a pretty big hurdle to get over to get up.
So essentially, we could have cyber terrorists right now who understand how to shut down a grid, for instance, an electrical grid.
That's a clear and present danger, and it's acknowledged.
But put it in perspective, they haven't yet, right? So they haven't figured it out to get around the security that we have. We just have to stay at least one step ahead. And I think the concern is, when will they get around the latest
When is the 9/11
hacking?
When is the 9/11 of our electric grid going to happen? Mm-hmm. When will the 9/11 of our gas supply system?
All it needs is motivation.
Yes.
Because the methodologies, the tools, and the vulnerabilities are all there.
And we found the Chinese, for instance. We found the Chinese and other foreign nationals have already been inside these systems, too.
Well, of course. But they don't have any motivation to hurt us, right?
Right.
All they need is information. It would be more of a terrorist or hacktivist that wanted to do it.
Speaking of hacktivists, I saw that Anonymous had said boldly that they were going to shut down the State of the Union, wasn't it, that they said? They apparently fell flat on their faces, didn't do too well at that.
Well,
yeah,
first of all, it's a group of people,
Anonymous,
right?
Anonymous group is somebody, anybody can say whatever they want.
That's right.
They
exactly.
do all the time.
Yeah.
And maybe there was somebody there that could have done more damage, but obviously the people that bragged about it, couldn't or didn't anyway.
Rich, one of the things that also happened this week was the Spanish police arrested a bunch of, I think they were Russians and Eastern Europeans, and there's some other nations that were involved in it, shut down a ransomware ring. We talked about this a bit with the FBI ransomware, where essentially, Eddie, we talked about this with some of the people we've helped, where essentially a thing pops up in your computer and says, if you don't pay me X, you can't use your computer anymore. And they caught one of these rings. Do you think, Rich, that this is a good sign of international cooperation? Are we getting better as nations at tracking down these buggers and shutting them down?
Yeah, we're getting much better. There's a lot more, you know, cross-jurisdictional cooperation. And that's actually called for by the signatories of something called the Budapest Treaty on Cybercrime. And even the non-signatories, like Russia, are cooperating across the board. The trouble is that it takes a really long time, and they can only focus on these big ones, like this one in Spain. But there's, you know, of course, hundreds of these groups, if not thousands.
And that is the problem of cooperation. And I guess that's the whole thing about the president's decree. We're trying to get an effective way of getting this information to one another so that we begin to get the bigger picture, right?
Yeah.
How good are we doing at that? How well are we doing at that, Rich?
Well, it's horrible right now. With all of the intelligence agencies that are getting this data have been sharing it in drips and drabs to critical infrastructure, but it usually comes in the form of, hey, watch out for communication from this IP address. So they won't tell you that you're targeted specifically, and they won't tell you who the what's on the other end of that IP address. And this executive order is trying to get a little further beyond that by making it easier to share classified information. And it makes it easier to get security clearances to get that information.
Mm.
My opinion is most of this information shouldn't be classified at all. And it's essentially public domain. It's going over the Internet.
Yeah.
And they could, if they just publish it broadly the way Shadow Server and a bunch of online sites do, then it would increase the expense for the attackers because they'd have to be moving their IP addresses a lot.
But, Richard, isn't there a trade-off? Some of these investigations are ongoing. If you tip off the fact that something's going to happen too early, you thwart that problem, but you don't catch the bad guys. You don't trace it back. So isn't that part of the problem? They'd share a lot more if there wasn't these ongoing investigations trying to catch the guys rather than just stop them.
Yeah. And that's the historical problem with intelligence gathering, right? Intelligence gatherers are very leery about exposing their sources to the people who, need the information. So they scrub it and hide the sources.
So we really need to get some serious sharing of that significant information. As you said, get rid of this, top secret label. Get that information out to people. It's like you take the undergrowth away so that the cockroaches have no less place to hide. It sounds like that's one of the things.
Yep. But the unfortunate thing is that the shared information is only about 20% of what a particular organization needs.
We'll wrap that thought up in just a moment. I remember a line from Fiddler on the Roof talking about something being so complex it would have crossed a rabbi's eyes. I don't remember that line from one of the songs, but as we were doing the first segment on security, I thought, my goodness, this is going to cross most people's eyes listening, but it is so important. Richard Steen has been with us here. He's our security expert, and I really thank you for being here and kind of putting a toe in the water of something that's terribly complex. Before we let you go, I want to just let people know that our homepage, InternetAdvisor.net, is a very important place for you to go for our show notes. And one of those show notes there will take you directly to an article in much more detail that Richard has written on this whole subject of the Presidential Policy Directive 21. He calls it Extreme Risk Management Gone Wrong. It was in Forbes.com. But, Richard, I want to make sure that I let people know about that, too. And so what are you up to, and what's next for you?
Oh, man, I've got a bunch of speaking engagements from Halifax to Sydney, Australia, and trying to finish the manuscript for my next book.
Going back to Sydney, eh?
Yeah.
I think when we had you on either the last time or the time before, you and General Hayden had just gotten back from there.
Yeah, and this won't be for the same thing. There's a big security conference that CBIT puts on every year, and they've asked me back.
Good. Mm-hmm.
And then, General Hayden and I will probably be going back later in the year.
General Hayden, by the way, former head of the CIA, who was on with us and had some really interesting insights.
Richard brought him on the show with us.
So. Appreciate that so much. So again, folks, take a look at InternetAdvisor.net, and you'll see links to both his article, Richard Steiner's article, on the presidential decree that came out this week and the important subject of getting the information flowing between the private and the public sector and protecting ourselves. Rich, thanks so much for being with us again.
Thank you, Pastor.
All right.
Good to talk to you guys.
Take care. Guys, I want this next segment we're going to talk about here. It blew my mind when I saw it this week. It came up on CNET. I happen to have a little application on my phone that is called Bump. Now, I found out about it. You can have it on your Android phone or you can have it on your iPhone. And the way it works is this, that at least up to this point for me, somebody showed it to me. I was at a meeting and they said, why don't you just install Bump? Because we could share a V card or information card, which gives, your home address and whatever information.
And we could
do
that for a long time now since Bump came out. You know, we were talking about not sharing information in the first couple segments. Yeah. Now we're talking about a new way of sharing information.
Yeah. Well, I have Sadie Bascom on the line with us from Bump to talk about this incredible new feature that is part of Bump right now. It's not just about sharing addresses or doing silly things with phones, but a very serious improvement to the system. Sadie, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So we are going to be bumping a whole lot more than information from our address books, I understand.
Yeah. It's you know, the app is really great. Right now we have, in the mobile app, we have photos and contacts and file sharing that you can do just by bumping your phones together. We find it really, really useful to be able to have, you know, to enable people to share contact between their phones, you know, without having to, you know, email everything.
Mm-hmm. But in addition to that, as you said, you can also share some files between phones. Ah, but here was the part that uncorked my head. When I put the update of the Bump program on, it said that anything that I put onto my iPhone, in this case, or Android phone, I can then transfer to my computer simply by tapping my phone to the space bar. Could this be true?
Yeah, but you're absolutely right. That's a new feature that we released this past week. It allows you to bump anything that you can bump to other phones within the app right to your computer. And it's super useful. What we're hoping is to eliminate the need for a USB drive, because, you know, those little tiny sticks, people forget them, they lose them all over the place. But what we're hoping to do is let your phone be that tool moving forward.
So Sadie, one of the problems is that my browser doesn't support Bump.
What?
What browser are you using?
Which ones do they support?
No, this is an app. It's an app, Gear.
It's an app. So all you need to do is go to bu.mp, mm-hmm. and then have the app installed on your phone. And you would be able to select whatever file or photo or contact you want to send to your computer and select it within the Bump app and then bump your spacebar.
So it's okay. It doesn't have to do...
Because right now I'm looking at a screen that says, sorry, your browser does not support Bump. Please download the latest version of Chrome, Firefox, or Safari.
So those are the three browsers that we are currently supporting. And as well, the most recent version of Internet Explorer also should work.
So IE 10?
Yes.
That's not what it says. So.
Oh, okay. So that's a new part of this now, isn't it?
And I only have 9.
Okay.
So I can't use it yet.
Ah.
Yeah, if you just update your browser, you should be able to use it.
Okay.
Okay, but for instance, I have Chrome, and I had Safari, and what was the other one? Chrome, Safari, and
Firefox.
And Firefox.
Firefox.
And now, like for instance, on my wife's computer, I have Windows 8 installed, and that uses Internet Explorer 10, so I could use it there as well, right?
Yes, you can.
What?
Yeah, it should work on Windows computers and Mac computers alike.
Okay, but it's not now. The other thing is it's not on Windows phones yet, right?
No, right now the mobile app is only available on Android and iPhone.
We're keeping
our eye on Windows Phone and BlackBerrys too for potential.
Okay,
future.
Yeah. I would imagine BlackBerrys in particular because on Windows phones as well, but BlackBerrys because of their enterprise heritage would be pretty cool. Yeah, Bump is a fairly new organization, isn't it?
It is. So the first app was actually, or the first version of the app was released in 2009. And since then, we've just been iterating and including features. And so it's constantly morphing and changing into a brand new app. The most recent version now lets you bump your phone to your computer, which is super useful, you know, especially if you're, for example, a meeting is coming up and you need to give a presentation. All you need to do is bump your work computer in your office, send a presentation to your phone, and then walk into the meeting, and you've got the file, and you're ready to go.
Wow. Now, by the way, folks, when you see this as Bump, you literally mean you bump the physical phone, bump it, tap lightly on the space bar, right?
That is correct, yeah. And then you'll see an error or a pop-up message
right.
asking you to confirm the transaction, and then you do, and then your document or your file will appear right on your computer or on your phone.
You know, Sadie, I think it's a lot easier to bump my phone to the computer than my computer to the phone. I'm just trying it the other way around. You know, it's not working as well.
You know, and this is also a really great way to back up your phone as well. I don't know about you guys, but I always get a little bit of anxiety whenever I plug my phone into my computer. Is my contact book going to be erased, or, you know, what is going to happen to all my photos?
Mm-hmm.
But this is a really great way to be able to send anything from your phone to your computer without worry of things going missing or getting relocated.
Well, and I've used Bump for a long time, like you said, for the last three years, I guess.
Right.
And love it. I think it's great because I really
can. Well, primarily for context,
but
right?
It's context mostly. And now with this new latest capability, this sounds very cool. I'm going to have to figure out how to get it onto my computer, though, because I need an app on my computer. Or I need the right browser on my computer. Is that right?
Yeah, just the browser. And then if you go to bu.mp, which is our homepage, you'll be able to interact with it with your phone.
Okay.
Yeah, so
thanks.
It's BU. By the way, folks, if you go to internetadvisor.net, just look at the big word bump there. And if you click on that, it'll take you to that site, which is B as in boy, U, dot, M as in Mary, P as in Peter. Bump. Eddie?
Yeah, you know, I haven't used the application at all. But coming from the corporate environment, the first thing I think of is encryption. Lost phone, presentation, confidential presentation material. Is there? Are you relying on the encryption embedded within the phones themselves to protect the data, or do you have any type of data protection within the Bump application itself?
Yeah, we have everything that we send back and forth is completely encrypted and very safe, so you don't need to worry about that at all.
Okay. Wow.
Well, I'm talking. Well, what about if someone loses their phone and they've already transferred an application, a confidential application, which they normally wouldn't do, but now they're using the Bump application to store data on there, like you said, as a USB flash replacement. Is there any type of password protection or encryption that you can protect within the Bump application, or are you relying on the native encryption on the phone? That's my question.
I guess that's a question. Yeah.
Oh, sure. So we don't have the Bump app right now. Is not password protected.
Mm-hmm.
But what we are hoping is that people, if they're having confidential information on their phone, to have their whole phone locked.
Right.
Well,
so exactly.
And that's the point I wanted to say.
That's a very good point that Ed's making there. You want to make sure that your phone has good encryption on it itself.
Get password protection or some type of encryption, and don't rely on this application itself to do that. I just want to make that clear.
Is there a size?
Exactly.
Sadie, is there a size limit in terms of the file that you can transfer from the phone to the computer or the computer to the phone?
There is. So right now we are limiting the size of the file to 30 megabytes.
You can
bump multiple smaller files or one bigger file.
I got you.
Since everything is so new, this may be changing in the future. We just need to see, you know, how people are using it and if there is a big desire to bump larger files.
So it's 30 megabytes, right?
30 megabytes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of that's a number of photos at full resolution. We don't necessarily want to do that, but if you need to, you can bring a number of photos over full resolution. That's also a lot of information. 30 megabytes is a good big file to be
Yeah, it is. It's pretty good. And it works with videos that you take on your phone as well, which I know that my mom loves. before we made this feature, it was really tough for me to send stuff to my family.
Yeah.
You know, they're miles and miles away.
Well,
congratulations.
Yeah, I was going to say, congratulations to you and the team at Bump on this. I love it. It's a great thing. Folks, this could be taking the place of all those little thumb drives we have in our pockets and our bags. Sadie Bascom, thanks so much for being with us.
Great. Thank you guys so much.
All right. Back in just a minute. And once again, thank you so much for being with us. Jason Iometta, by the way, is handling our phone and screening today. Rich Lozinski is a man behind the driver's wheel here as our engineer. Thank you very much, guys, for pitching in and helping us there. We have a three-hour show today, and we're just kind of coming and coasting into the end of the first hour, but there's two more hours to come, and we're going to be focusing in the next hour on Dave Sawyer's coming in studio. So we've got all the toys from Microsoft here. The new Surface Pro will be in studio. We'll be talking about that, and we're also going to have Aaron Wimette from Apex Digital to talk about Windows 8 and the new Office product. So all that's coming up next hour.
Yeah, I hope David, when he brings the Surface Pro in, forgets it. Or just leaves it with us for a week. He can come back next week and get it.
Could
we'd
you
like
save that
it.
Chance?
We have, over the years, Gary, you and I, because we have daughters and are very proud of them, and they are brilliant young ladies, have talked a lot about women in technology and just in general.
And getting them involved when they're young women, girls, and girl tech, and trying to get them involved because we lose so many people in general, but women in particular, before they ever get to the point where they could start a career in technology, they're, you know, encouraged by society or other factors to go somewhere else. And this next segment is all around trying to encourage young girls to get into the technology fields.
And women as well who are in business or to get in business and stay there. It's called Entrepreneur U. It was a It was an event that took place this past week on Wednesday. And with us online right now to talk about this and the future of this program is Tiffany Jones, who is a vice president for regional marketing and communications for Huntington Bank in the East Michigan region. Tiffany, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Very, very good to have you with us. Tiffany, let's talk a little bit about the scope of what Entrepreneur U is. You know, what is it? Okay. What is it attempting to do?
Well, Entrepreneur U is an initiative between four partners: Huntington Bank, Inforum, Michigan Women's Foundation, and Walsh College. And we help women become successful business owners. So that's the initiative.
Excellent. Excellent. So you're taking, now, what kind of women are you attracting to this? People who are already in business themselves or people who are considering going into business?
Well, this past Wednesday, we had an all-day conference. It was sold out. We had 200 women.
Wonderful.
Of all ages and all tracks. Throughout the day, they could attend something if they were a novice, if they were just thinking about starting a business, to a practitioner, to an achiever, and competitor. So we have four different tracks. Anybody and every woman could go and concentrate on their specific track in their lives right now.
So what was the upshot for this? What do you think the women walked away with when they left the Entrepreneur U workshop?
Encouragement, for one. That was the biggest thing, just to see other women doing it, doing what they want to do. So encouragement was a big element. And the second is resources. You know, where do you get funding? Where do you get marketing? So just having that resource available to them was very helpful.
I'm curious, what was the age range?
We had people probably 18 on up to, you know, people that this is their second job after retiring.
Uh-huh.
So all ages.
I was thinking that might be happening. You have both the young women who are kind of at the beginning of their careers, and then you have women who maybe after having raised a family or having been through a successful career are thinking about jumping out onto something else. Now, is this sole proprietor kind of programs where they're going to start their own businesses?
Yes, well, you know, and that was one of the workshops, actually. We had a lawyer come in to explain what is the difference between a sole partnership, a sole ownership or partnership or LLC, or, you know, what is a trademark? How do you get your trademark registered? So we had classes for every element in your life that you could possibly think of owning and operating your own business.
Tiffany Jones is with us right now. She's a vice president with Huntington Bank in the East Michigan region. What are some of the barriers that typical professional women like yourself or women who are trying to get into, setting up their own? But what are some of the barriers you run into typically?
Well, for one, it's just being a woman, you know, for so long, they say it's a man's world. So just getting the foot in the door. And, you know, quite honestly, women want to be superheroes. We take care of the family. We take care of the kids. And to run a successful business is very hard. So that's, you know, one of the barriers is trying to do it all.
Yes, exactly. I am a woman, WOMAN. What was that song from the late 70s or the 80s, I think? Yeah, you're trying to do it all. So In that sense, is it really feasible for women, let's say, for instance, if they're actively raising a family, do you find that that's a tough time of life for women to really get serious about being entrepreneurs?
It is hard, but as they say, anything worth having is work. It's going to be work involved. And actually, our keynote speaker, Lori Blaker, she took over her father's business, and at the time, she had three small boys, and she did it, and she even expanded her company in that time while she was raising kids. So that was one of the things that people took away from the conference is you can have a family, you can be a mom, and you can have a successful business. It will be hard, it will be tough work, but we have living examples that women can do it.
I'm not sure that men could do it, but there are many examples of women
men
that
could
do it.
To be honest with you. Yeah, I don't think so. I think most men would have a very hard time juggling all the women do. Tiffany, as we're talking about this, I know this was a single event that took place. There may be women who are listening right now saying, darn, I missed it. Is there some sort of ongoing way that women can connect with Entrepreneur U?
Well, they can definitely go to the website. We do have a website that's linked to Walsh College, so they can definitely get the information.
And we, by the way, we posted that as well on our homepage, so you can come off of internetadvisor.net.
That's right. There's a link right there.
Perfect. And Entrepreneur U is actually a two-part initiative. So the first part was the conference, the day-long conference, and then the second part we'll be having in October where women will be able to pitch their business plan and actually get some money, some cash to operate their business. So it is a continuous project, and people can get go on the website and get resources, find out how to get started, and all the questions that they ever had about opening, running their own business can be answered with the resources provided.
Now, I know you're with Huntington Bank, and Huntington has had a really wonderful track record of commitment of putting your money where your mouth is.
Yeah, thank you very much, not only the Huntington Bank, but to Welsh College, Inform, and the Michigan Women's Foundation. All four have really stepped up here, and that's great.
Absolutely.
So I want to thank you again, Tiffany, for having been with us. And again, folks, if you want to find out more about this, simply go to internetadvisor.net, and that's where you will find a link that will take you to the Entrepreneur U site, and that is at out of Walsh College, the folks who are also pitching in to help this. And our hats off to you and to our old boss, Mike Feezy, who I think is connected with you, right?
That's right. That's my boss, a wonderful boss.
He is. He's a tremendous man. He was a wonderful manager here, a general manager at WJR 760 AM in Detroit, and I know him personally. He's a wonderful man, and I'm just so proud of what Mike has done with Huntington to keep that community commitment up. And, Tiffany, this is a wonderful example of that. Thanks again so much for being with us.
It was my pleasure.
All right. That's Tiffany Jones. She's with Huntington Bank, and again, boy, hands off to Mike. Nice job you're doing out there. Thank you so much for pitching in that way. Hey, coming up in this next hour, it's the second of our 3 hours of the Internet Advisor. Hang on, because we are going to be talking about probably one of the most talked about pieces of hardware that's come out in recent memory. That is the Microsoft Surface Pro. It's their new laptop, tablet. Well, we'll see if we can define a little better for you in just a little bit with our friend Dave Sawyer, who's going to be in studio with the goods. We'll be talking with him and Aaron Wimmett coming up on this hour, next hour, about Microsoft's new computer, about Windows 8, and about Office 2013 and some of the other things coming from Microsoft. So make sure you stick around for hour two of the Internet Advisor. Whether you're listening to us on one of our affiliates through Michigan Talk Radio or through our podcast, contact us by email if you have a question through our homepage at internetadvisor.net. Or put your question into one of our forums. Now let's rejoin the Internet Advisor team for the second hour of our podcast. Welcome aboard for hour number two of the Internet Advisor. My name is Foster Brown. Gary Baker, Ed Riddell in studio, plus a couple of other very special guests. We're going to be talking about this hour Microsoft and its new computer, the Surface Pro. We'll also be talking about Windows 8 and Microsoft Office. And at the end of this hour, we're going to have a very special new segment of our program called Michigan Tech News with Mike Brennan. All that coming up this hour of the Internet Advisor. Thank you for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. And may I say, now I know that a lot of you folks through the Michigan Talk Network will be hearing us after this weekend, but for those of you who are listening to us live, as we're doing this program on our flagship station, WJR 760 AM in Detroit, please be careful out on the roads. I think our guests who have just arrived can corroborate this, but it has been very, very bad on the roads. We've had these snow squalls coming in that bring it down to near zero visibility, and we are hearing from the traffic people here that there are places where the expressways have been shut down because they have what essentially is black ice because of the quick cold temperatures that come, the snow on them. Gary, you got caught in part of that.
I did, and you know what? They offered to brief us before we go home. Very few places can people work where you get really good weather forecasting at work on your way and traffic on your way home.
So. Yeah, exactly. So for the rest of you folks out there, seriously, if you don't have to go anywhere right now, it would be good just to sit tight for a while because the traffic situation on some of these expressways is really bad because the weather just socked in suddenly. And when it did, it made the roads really treacherous. During this hour, by the way, we're going to be focusing on Microsoft to a great extent of our program. We'll be talking about the Surface Pro and Surface RT computers that have come out recently. Matter of fact, February the 9th was the official launch. And with us in studio to talk about that is Dave Sawyer, who is Technical Director at the Heartland Microsoft Tech Center. Dave, good to have you in studio with
us. It is great to be here.
You always bring all sorts of toys.
And there's just not enough time in between our segments to play with it as much as I would like.
We would need a whole video version of our program to handle our conversation with Dave and the hands-on. But we'll do our best to talk about that. And there are a lot of questions that are out there about this computer as well that we'll be asking you, Dave, as we go along. Also with us in studio is Aaron Wimette. And Aaron has been our go-to guy for Windows 8. Aaron, thanks so much for joining us as well.
Thanks for having me again, guys.
Yeah, and Eric, you wrote one of the training... Man, just pull the microphone a little closer to you. There you go. You have written a training manual, essentially, on Windows 8. Nuts and bolts?
Yeah. So I've helped in some of the courseware and content development for Windows 8 and for Windows Server.
So this would be the kind of things that Ed would take a course on as a tech in order to be able to deal with it, right? Have you had that book yet, Ed?
No.
Now, I know that Gary and Ed, you just recently got your copies of Windows 8. I was wondering, have you had a chance to install it and play with it yet?
I have not.
Okay. So. Now, you were playing with it as a pre-release, though, weren't you, Ed?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, and we've played with it before, but not the final release.
Yeah, I've had it out for a couple of months now on my wife's desktop, so I've had a chance to get my hands on it, and I've had some questions. Matter of fact, Aaron and I went through some questions before on this.
I'm waiting for some sort of touch screen capability. Oh. You know, if David were to happen to just leave the Surface Pro here, I would be very happy to use it and get really familiar with Windows 8 before I turned it over to him next week or something.
Jump ball question, guys. If the next computer you're going to buy doesn't have to have touch...
Well, I've used Windows 8 every day at work, obviously, during the beta phase and also... you know, now that it's been released. And I've used it on a variety of devices. I move pretty seamlessly between devices that are touch-enabled and devices that are not. So there has been a kind of a rumor that, oh, if you don't have a touch device, Windows 8 is not for you. And that's very far from the truth. I found it to be very easy to use my standard work-issued Dell laptop. And that is not touch-enabled.
With no touch screen on it.
But then I also have a variety of devices I have, including my own Surface RT. I have an earlier Windows 7 touch computer that I had at home that I've upgraded to Windows 8. So when I have touch, it's great because then I can sit on the couch, I can play games. So if you're looking to buy a new computer, you certainly would want to look at some of the new ones that are touch-enabled.
If you're moving ahead with a computer, I think you would want a portable with touch. Aaron, you're nodding your head.
No, yeah? I would agree. I don't see any reason not to get it, especially with the price point of them now that you can get them with or without at about the same price.
One of the things that people often think is that you have to get a new computer to add touch, or if you're a serious gamer, that you know you wouldn't be able to use one of these small laptops. Mm-hmm. And there's a variety of new screens coming out that will add touch to an existing desktop computer.
Really?
So if you are a power computer user, you're a gamer, maybe you just built your own system and you want to add touch to it, you can go and get a touch monitor. Dell makes a really nice touch monitor. And there's a variety of other people who do as
so
well.
So you can take an existing system and put a touch screen on it without seamlessly, pretty much.
Yes.
Okay, Eddie, well, how about you? You know, let's say you suddenly have $1,300 in your hands and you got a new computer lined up. What would it be?
You know, I'd probably get a laptop with touch screen capability. I just wouldn't want to give up the huge hard drive capabilities, you know.
Of a desktop?
500 gigabyte because, you know, I'll watch movies. You know, I store image files. You know, I back up people's data to my computer.
Let's put a little footing on this, Dave. I want to talk about using the new machines with an extra monitor. Side monitor, because essentially that's what I do with my MacBook Pro. I put it on a stand and I plug it into a bigger monitor. How about you, Gary?
So the real question for me, both to Aaron and Dave, would be, you know, I agree I don't want to give up the capacity that I would have, but can I just transfer that to the cloud and use a Surface?
You can. There are a variety of things that make that easy. One of the offerings is an offering called SkyDrive from Microsoft.
Right.
And we make it very easy because it now integrates with your Windows Explorer. When you download the software for the desktop, you see it right there in your favorites, and you can open it up and copy files to it. We give you 7 gig by default, but you can have more if you want to pay for it.
I want to do something because we're going to be taking a pause in just a minute. We have a unique opportunity of here. We're going to be talking about the devices, about the software with Aaron Wimette from Apex Digital and Dave Sawyer from Microsoft. But I'd like to open our phone lines up. If you have a question about Windows 8, about the machinery of Microsoft, no Apple haters in here, please. 800-859-0957. I'm using my Apple. 800-859-0957 is the number. If you'd like to join us with a question about Microsoft's new Surface Pro or about Windows 8. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. And this, I think, will be kind of, except for our last segment of the program, by the way, this hour, which is a special new feature with Mike Brennan called Michigan Tech News. We'll tell you about this as we go on. We pretty much focused on Microsoft and on their equipment and also on their software as well. And to help us do that, we have Dave Sawyer, who is a technical director for the Heartland Microsoft Tech Center here, located in Ann Arbor.
No, Southfield.
Southfield.
And the photo of Dave.
Oh, that's right. That's
you know, it's great because Dave is briefing two really smart nerds here in Michigan. One is our head nerd, our governor, Governor Snyder, and the other is John Fickney, your boss, right?
Yep, exactly.
So
he's talking about if you go to internetadvisor.net and our homepage, the picture that we have for Dave is the one of him showing them around the then new of Microsoft. It's only been there how long?
Well, we've been open about 24 months, so about two years now.
So that's about a two-year-old photo. I remember when I took it.
By the way, I've got to say, I know I'm jumping, but quickly, we've got another Microsoft something coming to Michigan, I understand, out at Somerset.
That is correct. In the latest blog, they did announce that some of the new store openings that we're doing this year, and one of them is going to be here in Detroit, and one it's going to be in Troy.
In the Somerset.
That's right.
Yeah, that's
and
cool.
It's fun because actually it wasn't announced until after somebody found out that there was a job opening for a store manager here in Detroit. And somebody said, why would we need a store manager if we weren't going to have a store? And then David Microsoft came forward and said, okay, you're right. We're going to open a store. Right?
Let me also introduce Aaron Wimette is with us. Aaron's been on before. He's the vice president for IT for Apex Digital. And you're a very special partner to Microsoft as well.
Yeah, we're part of one of their Cloud Champions club partner members. So we help accelerate businesses in transitioning from their on-premise environments to cloud-based environments.
And Apex Digital Solutions is the Microsoft's Partner of the Year here in a four-state region, right?
Yes.
Heartland four or five states?
It is four. Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky, and Tennessee.
Yep.
Thank you. Excellent. All right, guys.
Partner of the Year. That's pretty good.
Medals have been passed out. Let's talk about the hardware. Because it was the 9th was the official launch. Saturday was the official launch of the Pro. And Dave Sawyer can't get the grin off his face. Although, I noticed, now, let's talk about it. You've got two devices in front of you. One is the Surface RT. That came out in October. And that is more or less a tablet, but in the same form factor as the Pro. It has less storage space, less power, but basically the same look.
Basically the same design. Mm-hmm. So it's a great canvas for running Windows 8. But the RT version has longer battery life. When you think about when you're thinking about it in the Apple product line perspective, you have offerings that have super long battery life,
right.
And you have some that are full computers.
Right.
And so what we have with the RT is the kind of offering where you have long battery life.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, we've added the ability to run all of the new Windows 8 apps on there, and it comes with Office, Home, and Student. So
it basically provides
you a great platform for running your productivity apps. The downside to that is that it is based on an ARM processor, so you can't run your older Windows apps on this.
An ARM processor would be it runs cooler, but it's also less powerful for processing a lot of information.
That is correct.
Okay.
So, and because it's less powerful, it also gives you really long battery life.
Exactly.
People said, you know, I'd love to have my computer with me, but I want something like an iPad that has really long battery life.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm watching movies and when I'm playing video and audio, I want something that I can use for a long period of time. And this does that, plus offers you the ability to run Office.
Now, I notice you've got a keyboard on it, the cute little click-on keyboard. Do you use it primarily with a keyboard, or do you use it like a tablet?
I do both. So, you know, the nice thing is that you can go ahead and click the keyboard on there, and it also acts as the cover for you. So you don't have to leave home without it, and it doesn't add a lot of bulk to the device. But if I'm sitting, let's say, on the couch or in bed and I'm playing a game of solitaire or browsing the web, I don't have to have the keyboard on. The nice thing about this is that you don't have to take it off just to use it as a tablet, because you see it here, it folds behind. And when it folds behind, the keys are deactivated, so they don't work.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So you can think of it just like a cover like you might think of normally. But the idea here is that when it's down and the kickstand is out, and you're using it on the desk, you can use it as a keyboard. If you want to just fold it behind, the keyboard is deactivated.
So sitting on the couch, you can do things like what? How do you use it?
I use it to play games.
Okay.
I use it for browsing the web. I can go ahead and get some video clips or some
email.
Email, yes, absolutely. Okay. I have my OneNote on there, so I could go ahead, if I find something interesting on the web and I want to put that in my personal collection, I can go ahead and basically print that right into OneNote, because I use OneNote to take all my notes. And the nice thing is that OneNote syncs up to SkyDrive and then back to my work computer.
Okay, so you could, anything you put on the RT, then you can find through the cloud, SkyDrive, you can go back to work and find it there as well. Okay.
And the nice thing is that I just bought a brand new printer, HP printer, and I can print from anywhere. I can be driving down the highway with my tablet, and in this case, it could be any tablet, right? So it could certainly be the Surface Pro, and I can print to my printer at home, and it be sitting there when I got home. And that's really a very nice feature. And so we're seeing the peripherals starting to work together.
Yeah, I mean, printing was one of those things that people always said, well, there's a couple things I can't do on my tablets today. I can't use Office, right? And of course, on the RT, it comes with Office Home and Student. So you have Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote all there for you, included in the price. The other one is they wanted to hook up to peripherals that they already had. So the nice thing about the Surface RT and the Surface Pro is they're running Windows. So they have a wide variety of printer drivers. We have a USB port on the side, and we also support a micro SD card for additional expansion of storage.
Okay, so you get up to 32 gigs, I think, isn't it? Or
64.
You can actually get 64 more gigs on board with that. Now, quickly, the Surface Pro then. What's the difference?
Well, the Surface Pro, people have been excited about it. It didn't come out with the original launch of Windows. It actually came out 90 days later, so we just came out last Saturday.
Dying to know why.
It is.
Don't get sidetracked on that.
It is a little bit thicker.
Yes.
But it is a full i5. So this is the same as a computer.
So this would be like any other notebook or ultra notebook kind of computer that with running Windows, that you can run all of your legacy Windows 7 programs on it. Anything that you could run on a PC, you can run on that.
Correct. And it's in a tablet form factor. So now you kind of have a great best of both worlds compromise, where you say, I have my full power of my PC. It's an i5. So I have multiple cores there. It's fast. I've got great graphics, so I could play games. And I have it in a very portable format.
And, you know, a lot of people have said, but wait a minute, the battery life isn't very good compared to a tablet. But compared to my computer, it's better.
Yes.
Right?
So
and
this
if
is
I'm
a...
comparing it to an i5 computer, it's better battery life.
Yeah, that's correct. So when you're comparing it to a tablet, again, remember the RT gives you that extra long runtime. The Surface Pro gives you a lot more horsepower, but less runtime. It's fairer to compare it in battery life to a PC that you would have or a laptop.
Because that's the capability.
Now, it has been compared. Now, Cal isn't here for us to do a little battle on this. But, I mean, it has been compared by a blogger named Ed Bott, who, by the way, folks, B-O-T-T on ZDNet, I think is one of the fairest of the analysts that are out there. He's not grinding any particular axe. And he did a comparison between... Now, the computer he used to compare to the Microsoft Pro was the MacBook Air. Do you think it's a fair comparison?
I do. I think, you know, the MacBook Air is using an i5 processor as well. This is third generation, so it's the latest and greatest. I think that they compared the amount of free space that was available on there, on the hard drive, because, you know, the software does take up some space. So, and just from the comparison of power and battery life, it seemed like a fair comparison.
Okay. I asked you this before. Okay, go ahead and get off the track on this. Why the heck didn't they put out the Pro first and then the RT second? Do you have any ideas?
I don't.
Okay.
So, you know, I think that in this case, they wanted to go ahead and have something that had the long battery life. There was a number of other designs from our partners, and there still are great designs from our partners out there. At launch, and they've been coming ever since then. We were talking about a couple of them at break.
Yeah,
but
I took
a lot.
I put a comparison together between a Samsung Series 5 Ultra Touch. Now that I don't think has a detachable keyboard on it. I don't think it's one of those Ultra books, and it's a lot less you know, in terms of the cost of the comparing the two of them, although their specs are pretty much the same. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that. Aaron, I want to get you involved in the conversation because one of the things that is happening here is that more and more is being put into the cloud. Office in particular is one of those things. So let's talk about this in the next segment, how the new Microsoft Office 2013 and Office 365 work together with these two new devices from Microsoft. This is a Microsoft day here on the Internet Advisor. I hope it's being helpful to you. I can't tell you the number of people who have asked me, going forward, I'm looking for a new computer. What do I get? And Microsoft has come up with these two new products now. This most recent one, the Surface Pro, last Saturday, February the 9th, it was launched as the full deal. You get everything on it. You get a full PC. It's not like the RT, which came out beforehand, which is more like a tablet in terms of its capabilities. Aaron Wimette is also in a studio from Apex Digital. Aaron, one of the things that I think is part of this story, has to be part of the story, is Office and from Microsoft now comes in a very different kind of way. Can you talk about both Office 2013 and Office 365? What's the differences?
Well, I guess if you really look at it, Office 2013 is just the next iteration of the Office product. So it's your Word, Excel, Outlook, Access, Publisher. It's all of those pieces.
They pretty much look the same.
More or less. There's some additional features that that are really built for cloud integration. We see when you're talking about SkyDrive, some online services. But for the most part, it is really the next iteration. It's a little snappier. It's got some new enhancements. But it's functionally still the same product that you're familiar with on your desktop.
Okay. But the big deal is you're not going to go to a store and buy. Well, you could go to the store and buy it, but it'll cost you a whole lot of money.
So what Microsoft has done, and I think this is really the way that a lot of organizations are going, is converting that one-time purchase every 3 years or every 4 years or every five or however long you decide you can stretch out your software purchase, is really trying to convert that into more of a subscription basis. So instead of paying $400 or $500 once every 5 years, now you have the opportunity to pay like $9 a month every
You're paying roughly $100 a year, am I right? Am I being fair with that?
Yes,
roughly $100 a year. Now it's a subscription, right?
Right.
So I understand one of the benefits of this is that, like, I've had to wait, like, because it costs so much. If I had, like, Office 2007, I'd hang on to that thing for dear life because it cost me a fortune.
Mm-hmm.
This case, once I make that investment, if you will, it's going to be, yes, $100 every year, but I will constantly be getting the newest version of Office, right?
Yes.
So every time something's changed on it, a new interface, whatever, I'm going to be able to get that.
And you also have the ability to load it on more than one computer. So
what's the deal with that? Because I've heard rumors about numbers of computers.
So that's it. Right now it's five devices. So if you're roughly $100 a year, you can load it on up to five devices.
Which is real different than from before.
It's now legal to do that. People used to do it anyway, unfortunately, and it was illegal to do it.
And that is one of the reasons why we now have a key code where you have to activate.
Right.
So the idea is that this allows – it looks at the way people are using their devices now, which is, I have a laptop that I use at home or a desktop. I also have my little portable machine that I bought for $500 or $600 that I carry with me sometimes when I'm on vacation, and I have my wife's machine. So it allows you to say, okay, well, I have a couple different computers around the house, so for one fee, I now can get all of those to have Office.
And they all have the latest and greatest. Eddie, you were going to say something?
Well, I was going to say that the five-user license sounds like what the student edition used to be, I believe. Was it a student three?
There was three, I think.
Three,
it? Yeah,
okay.
I used to have three on that. Yeah. But this gives you, as I understand with it, you're no longer limited to like the Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. You get the whole schmigega, I believe, right?
Was that a technical term?
It's a Yiddish term that I learned from Northside, Milwaukee. It means the whole deal, right?
So it's the full boat. And like Dave said, it's really getting back to how people are really using it. If you scroll back, roll back the clock, 4 or 5 years, most people only had like one computer in their home. They had, the family computer. But now, your kids are having mobile devices of some sort. You buy them a laptop sometime in high school so they can do their homework on stuff.
Big deal for me too was that I love Publisher. I make all of our birthday cards is my particular thing. I make all of our birthday cards for my family in Publisher. I would have had to spend a fortune to get Publisher because it was never part of that basic home and student package. In this particular case, you can even get Access, which is the database a tool, am I right?
Yes, and there's lots of really neat things you can do that people would normally do in a spreadsheet because they didn't have access to the database tool. But Access is a great database tool to use. Publisher's another great one to play
with. Love it. And OneNote comes with... So there's a whole bunch of things. Now, what's the difference between Office 2013, the subscription, and Office 365?
So when you look at just Office 2013, it's still a product. It's a product that you go and you buy, whether you're subscribing to it or whether you're going to Best Buy or wherever and buying the software.
And it's software I put on my computer.
Exactly. It's software you load on your computer. It's software you load on your delightful Surface.
Right.
and you may get
mugged on the way out.
You might. But that's really it is still a product centric, thing. So when you switch over to Office 365, you're looking at Office 365 as a service. So it's not just the software that you get to download and install, but it's also access to like online storage like SkyDrive and like Office web apps. So you have the ability to modify and edit documents online. So even if you're at a computer where you don't have your tools,
right,
you don't have the stuff that you have installed, you can log in and you still have access to some, kind of light versions of those tools.
Okay.
So, I mean, Office 365, although it has Office in the name, it basically is targeted at people that need a more powerful tool set. And so it has access to Exchange. It has access to SharePoint. It has access to Link. These are all the tools that large corporations would use. Okay.
Oh, I didn't realize that. So you actually get an Exchange account?
Yes.
Oh, so, that's awesome.
So with Office 365, we used to have a 5-user minimum. On our tools like that, and now with Office 365, a single person can buy it. And the idea is that now you can have those professional tools on the back end. You don't have to have a server and maintain it.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, part of that subscription, one of the higher end pieces is that you also can get licensed for Office at the same time.
Now, can I get that on 5 computers as well? See, because here's my problem. I have an Office 365. I got grandfathered into it because I had it a Microsoft business account, a website, et cetera. So, I mean, can I put that on 5 machines too with Office 365?
You can put it on 5 machines, but you end up having to pay for the 5 accounts. So,
oh, really?
Yes. Office subscription.
Because it would be better, than it sounds like for me, because I'm paying a monthly fee for that, and it's not much. It's like $5, $6, $7, I think it is. Because I don't need all those other bells and whistles, so I should really get rid of that and then get an Office subscription?
No. you are a unique person in that you use both Windows and Macs,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And you like Outlook on the Mac,
yes,
which interfaces directly against Exchange,
uh-huh,
for calendaring and
yes,
for contact.
Yes, yes,
so,
yes.
So for you, you really need that Exchange account in order to do those business-like features, those more advanced features. You're not a standard, webmail kind of person.
Okay.
Although you have a ton of webmail accounts to
yes,
play with.
I do.
you are be a little unique, and so
okay.
I would say you would want to keep your Office 365.
Okay, that's important.
Or, if you were a business person with your own home business,
mm-hmm,
right, I would suggest that you look at Office 365. It offers you a whole set of features.
Mm-hmm.
I have another friend who has a small business,
mm-hmm,
not many employees, one server, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he uses that server for accounting. And he doesn't have an IT person he works with. He doesn't have, a whole ton of servers in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a lot of these smaller businesses, they say, well, how do I do email like those big companies? And how do I get some of the tools for instant messaging in that, like these big companies? And this is the way that they
do it
without having to have servers and an IT person that comes and sets it up
advantage
for them.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So there's
small
nothing for them to maintain.
So in my last company, we had an Exchange server on-premise. And because of the space on that server, we had everybody that had an account limited to 100 megabytes. So what they were doing in order to save their email, they put those PST files all sorts of places around our network just so that they had them available because we had limited them to such a degree, 100 meg. We invited Aaron's company, Apex Digital, to come in and help us move to Office 365 for the company. And immediately they got 25 gigabytes of space. It was backed up, right? We had access to SharePoint. So it made a huge difference in the way we work. So not only was it cheaper and easier and we had professionals running it because they were on Microsoft servers, but our productivity went up.
And you pay per user. So the nice thing is that, again, if you're growing a user, you don't have to go buy a bigger server. If you're shrinking a user, you can turn those on and off. So you can add and remove users as necessary. It's a very flexible system. And, you know, even if you were a one-person business that wanted great features, you could go ahead and do that. It's not very expensive to do that.
Now, guys, what's the bottom line here, guys? Would you spend – now, the money, for instance, for a pro, is you're talking about, what, $1,200, $1,300 with when you got the keyboard and all the rest of the goodies together?
So it is $899 for the 64-gig unit and $999 for the 128.
Okay.
Most people love the 128.
Okay,
that's why it's sold out.
It's sold out. All right. So
would this be good for students next year, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I think that it offers a lot of portability plus a lot of power.
Okay. Guys,
so we're going to mug him on the way out.
I want to thank you so much, Dave, for being here with us. Guys, hang on for just a minute. Mike Brennan is going to be with us shortly. We're going to be talking about Michigan Tech News and have our first featured report from Mike on that. And then we'll also wrap up our conversation about the Microsoft Pro and about Office 365 and Office 2013 from Microsoft. Thank you so much for being with us on this hour of the Internet Advisor. Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell. Also in studio with us, Dave Sawyer. It's always fun to have him here. He's the technical director for the Heartland Microsoft Tech Center, which is in Southfield. And also Aaron Wimette, who is the IT VP of IT for Apex Digital. Aaron, you were talking about a good site to visit, and I have, matter of fact, I'm going to have to put that up here. I forgot to put that on our homepage. A good link for the Office products to sort this kind of thing out.
So I guess that, you know, you can go to www.office365.com. It has a pretty good breakdown of the products that are available.
Okay.
I think that'd be a good
and
one.
I think another one was Microsoft.com. What's the name?
Microsoft.com/Office365. Yeah. Either one will take you right to the same place. One, you'll see the business focused Office 365 subscriptions. And then right there on the top, it'll take you also to the home based Office 365 subscriptions.
Okay.
So the idea is that, you know, we talked about having Exchange and Link and SharePoint and being very business focused. That's one aspect of it. The other, of course, is the home premium side of things, which is the $99 subscription per year that we were just talking about that's targeted at home users that gives them a lot of flexibility with Office as a subscription.
Now, that's going to be, you know, in 3 years, that'll be $300. Is it worth it, do you think?
Well, a single copy of Office right now is $399 retail.
Okay.
So if you say, well, I want to stay current, and I do have multiple devices, so why wouldn't I subscribe? If you say, oh, I haven't upgraded my Office in 10 years, and I'm still using Office 2003, well, maybe you would want to buy one copy and put that on one computer and use that for a while. Right?
Okay.
You can do that too.
And the other thing, again, folks, is you're getting it constantly updated all the time, getting the latest. Okay, guys, something that is a brand new feature here is actually somebody that we have known for quite a few years, Gary, you and I, Mike Brennan with Michigan Tech News, is now going to be a regular part of our Internet Advisor program. And about this time and our show, which would be with a two-hour show, usually at the end of our first hour, we're going to have a special with the Michigan Tech News headlines, and Mike Brennan is with us right now. Mike, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Thanks very much, Foster. Hey, good talking to you too, Gary.
Hey, good seeing you, Mike.
Welcome on board. Let's dive right into some of the Michigan Tech headlines that you've got for us, Mike.
Yeah, sure. Let's start off with one of our local favorites, CompuWare Corporation. As everybody knows, Elliott Management, a New York hedge fund, has been taking a run at them, and CompuWare doesn't really want to get bought, right? So they've come up with sort of a poison pill defense of sorts, where if somebody does buy the company, then they're going to have to pay the top C-level folks like 2 years' salary and a bunch of other stuff, and so it'd make it unattractive, or they think less attractive, for, you know, somebody hostile like Elliott to move in and swoop in and buy the company.
So. And the company's rationale for doing that is not to do what you just stated, but it's to keep the management team together rather than, you know, run for the hills and get a different job because they think it might be taken over. If it is taken over, then they will be compensated to go out and look for another job afterwards. That's really the rationale from the company standpoint.
That's a good spin, Gary.
Yeah, from the management side. All right, what's your next headline, Mike?
Well, Michigan, you know, we have a lot of problems with our election system, but some of it's not so bad. So right now we're rated sixth in the nation in election performance, and that's based on a Pew Charitable Trust study. Categories such as ease of voting, accuracy of systems, and completeness of data. We only fall down because we don't have online registration, which the Secretary of State, I guess, is quite interested in getting us involved in, but this hasn't happened yet. So
I guess we're having the benefit of having a chief nerd or a nerd in chief, with Rick Snyder being the former president of Gateway Computers and now being in there. So we, I guess, look for some hopeful signs for the future with that.
Absolutely. Well, I think online registration is a great idea. There's really no reason not to do it because, I mean, you can renew your driver's license, your license plates, everything else. So they know who you are, you know. So
exactly. And moving on?
Well, our friends at Anonymous Richard Steen and I have written about extensively, they vowed to make sure that the president's State of the Union address wouldn't be streamed on the Internet. Well, that seemed to be kind of an empty threat because everything seemed to work just fine. But they were annoyed with the president over a variety of things, and they typically do denial of service attacks and bring down websites. But if they tried that, it didn't work this time.
I think that's good news. That's Anonymous, the hacker group, which has done a lot of nuisance damage and sometimes more serious than that to other sites. Anything else on the national front?
Yeah, we got hackers, speaking of which. They played around with the emergency alert system out in the San Francisco area, which is, turns out that you'd think that these things would be pretty tough to crack, but they're not. And so when you're on the emergency alert system, that's where you're breaking into regular broadcast TV or cable TV and radio.
Right.
And they send out a zombie alert that they were rising from the dead and attacking the living. So, yes, highlights the vulnerability of our vaunted emergency alert system.
And that, by the way, is rather serious. WJR, our flagship station in Detroit, is one of the called 50,000-watt clear channel stations. And we were supposed to be a network for in national security, which, so for instance, those signals originate from WJR and go out to many other stations that repeat them. We're the base for that. So the seriousness of this, folks, is that system was hacked in San Francisco, which could be very serious. It's like crying wolf. How about some entrepreneur news to wrap things up?
Yeah, sure. Wayne State University's Tech Town, they've tried for years now with to do a variety of innovative things. They've come up with something quite interesting, which they're calling their Venture Accelerator Program. And what it's going to do is put you in a 12-week boot camp of sorts, and the teams that do get accepted, ready for this, folks, you get a $10,000 loan. Well, that's a loan, but hey, 10 grand. And you also get access to upwards of $15,000 in additional services and other funding. So, you know, if you got a great idea, but you don't know how to execute it, then, you know, you got till March 15th to apply.
Okay, wonderful. Mike, I want to thank you so much for having this Michigan Tech News. Folks, we're going to have this on a regular basis here at this time of the program. Mike Brennan publishes this online, by the way, if you go to mitechnews.com, and you'll find a link to that on our homepage at internetadvisor.net. You can see the stories that he talked about today and much more detail. And our idea is going to be we're going to try to keep you in touch with the tech news highlights from the state of Michigan and things that are impacting entrepreneurs as well. Mike, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Foster.
We look for your report again next week.
All right.
Thank you. Let's wrap things up here in studio, guys, with Dave Sawyer, Aaron Wimmett, Gary Baker, and Ed Riddell. Guys, I knew you were chasing the question back and forth off the air. What were the questions you were asking about? Eddie, you in particular had a question about what to buy.
Well, you know, I got a couple kids go in college next year. I got one now, and one's going to go next year. We have a couple laptops at home, and it sounds like maybe the 365 might be the way to go.
The Office 365, yep. the subscription to it?
Yep.
Okay, versus the Office, the 2000?
Yeah, you can buy it standalone like you've always bought it, or you can buy it on subscription.
But, I mean, you're talking about the Office 365, which are like the business?
Well, that way I could, get the 5-user license.
Well, I think we were talking about, I think off the air we were talking, there's two different lines of products. There's the home side and the enterprise side. So for Ed, we were talking about We thought that maybe the home premium side would be better. And that's the one that gives you the 5 user licenses to be able to download.
That's an important distinction.
Thank you.
Yeah. So then, for instance, Talon and Sharday, who were out of the state, that you can get licenses for them. They can get the whole thing. Gary, you could do the same thing for Lauren.
I could. I was thinking more on the hardware side, looking at do I get a laptop or do I just go to the Surface Pro? And boy, I'm looking at it right now.
I
like that Surface Pro.
I do too. Folks, his bodyguards will be escorting him out of the building. Dave Sawyer, thanks so much for being with
us. Thank you.
Been a ball. Aaron Wimmett, thank you.
Thank you.
We will be having you back here to answer some more questions, some of the hard ones about Windows 8 as well as we go on. Folks, stick around, because coming up next, it's your turn to ask a question of us. 800-859-0957. That's 800-859-0WJR. Get in line right now. Ed Riddell, Gary Baker, myself will be here to try to answer your questions in the coming hour. And remember that the only dumb question is the one you don't ask. 800-859-0957. We'll be back to start answering your questions after this break. You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. If you want to see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage or enter our forums and place your question there. You can also friend us on Facebook. And welcome to our third hour of the Internet Advisor, the part of the program that I think we all enjoy the most, and that's when we get to talk with you, our listeners, and try to answer your questions as well. Our phone number, 800-859-0957, 800-859-0WJR. If you're listening to us right now, it's live, and you can give us a call, and we'll do our very best to get your answer at 800-859-0957. Welcome back to the second hour. Third hour. This normally is second hour, but this is the third hour of the Internet Advisor. And I want to thank, by the way, Dave Sawyer from Microsoft for sticking around. Thank you, Dave. Dave is going to be here. If you have a question about a Windows 8 or a Microsoft device that you'd like to ask, great time to have him join the conversation. Of course, Gary Baker is here, and Eddie Riddell is in studio as well.
You know, Foster, I was talking to you on the drive-in today, and I was working on a laptop of a friend of my son's, and I knew it was a hardware issue on this thing, and I ran some diagnostics on it, and hard drives have something called smart technology on there, and like smart diagnostics, I never knew what it meant. I had to look it up. It's self-monitoring and reporting technology. Anyways, when I ran these diagnostics, the hard drive said it had a gravity event. And I'm like, not just one, it had 50 gravity events.
So the background on this is a young lady who has had a computer just a couple years old, and it just wasn't working right for her. And so she was going to toss it out and get a brand new one. Well, Ed says, hold on, before you do that, let Uncle Ed have us. And when he got it, gravity events. In other words, folks, if it were my computer, it would say a coffee event, or it would say a tea event, or it might say something like he took it swimming.
Yeah.
But in other words, your computer,
it was dropped.
Will tell. It's busted.
It was dropped. And for $60, you can get a 500 gigabyte hard drive to replace it. So, yeah, we're working on that. But I mean, I've seen smart diagnostics before.
But never.
I've never seen that description before.
I had a gravity event.
Tongue in cheek, right?
It is a great time to think about solid state then.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because past behavior says maybe you should think about a solid state drive. No moving parts.
And true. It speeds up the computer so much.
Easy on, right?
Yeah.
Now, we were talking, by the way, about hybrid drives. I just saw that recently. Matter of fact, you and I, Dave, were looking at the specs for a Samsung book that is running Windows 8, and it was saying that it had a 24-gig flash drive piggybacked on top of a 500 gig hard drive. That's pretty smooth.
Yeah, that is a great way to speed up some of the access to your drive. It is not as fast as having an all solid state, but it's a good compromise between having fast and having capacity. We talked about, how much capacity do you need?
Yeah.
Can you rely on the cloud for some of that?
Very good point.
Right.
And so this is one of those things where you say, well, I have a budget and I need some capacity, so this is a great compromise.
And the price on those is coming down, isn't it? Significantly, the hybrids.
On the hybrids, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
The solid states are still a little pricey.
You can still get them for not that much more than $100.
Yeah. For 128, for instance?
For 128,
it's usually now a dollar a gigabyte is basically a good way to think about
it. So 128 gig solid state drive, folks. No moving parts.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, that is big.
Yep.
That
and
is
then
big.
Get them on sale even a little bit cheaper.
Hey, we got a whole bunch of people. Let's dive into our questions here. The number again is 800-859-0957. Dave, you want to move over to the next seat. You can see the monitor as well. And let's go right here to Bert from Vermilion, Ohio. Bert, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Thanks for taking my call. I have a Toshiba Netbook 205 that I bought used about 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't use a password to get booted up. All I ever did was hit enter and the thing would come to life.
Mm-hmm.
Today, it doesn't want to boot up. It just keeps telling me that it's the wrong password and that I should change the password. And I'm stumped. And I went online and the only thing I see is people trying to sell you some kind of program for $9.95 or $19.95 to how to change your password.
How about Eddie?
Well, I'm sorry, you said this was a netbook, a Toshiba netbook.
Toshiba netbook. Yes, Toshiba netbook, 205.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and have you Windows
7 Ultra on it, and I really don't even care if it would have a password. Because I'm the only one using I would prefer not to even have a password.
Mm-hmm. Right, but how did this password get on there? So is it up to
this point he hasn't needed it.
It was a rhetorical question.
Sorry.
So I guess the first thing is it a Windows password or a BIOS password?
Exactly, that's the first thing I was going to ask.
So, I have no idea. So, all I know is
Is it in a black screen or when you first power it up?
You first power it up, there's the black screen that says, do you want to use Windows 7 Ultra, or do you want to use an earlier version? And when you just click, when you just hit enter onto the use the Windows 7 Ultra, then it goes to the regular screen where it has the Toshiba logo and it has the user password.
Hmm. So, at any point, do you see a Microsoft is loading portion of it? You know, where it looks like Windows is loading. You know, your Windows 7?
No. It never gets that far. When I first downloaded some updates and loaded that onto the computer, but after that, it just keeps telling me that, that the password is not valid, even if I hit enter. I never put a password on because I bought it used, and like I say, last 6 months or so, I never needed to supply a password. All I would do is just hit enter, and it would then the Windows 7 logo would come on, and everything would be fine.
Well, do you know which account this is for? So does it tell you which account it's trying to log into? Is there a username there associated with the?
Well, there is. My username is on top.
So it is a Windows.
Which is my first name above this.
Okay.
But I never put that in as a password.
Okay.
Okay, Bert, hang on a second.
Hold on 1 second.
Yeah, we're going to take a break and we're going to do a little noodling around. The doctors will consult.
Okay.
And we'll come back in just a moment to talk with you. And also to you as well at 800-859-0957. The Internet Advisor is on the air for you. Wouldn't you know, the first question we got from Bert in Ohio has got us all kind of... The doctors have all been chewing on this. By the way, Joe, Vince, and Sally will be with you in just a moment. Guys, we've talked it over here in studio.
Well, and I think we pretty much determined that it's a Windows password somehow became enforced. So, Joe, have you actually just tried to hit enter and not use a password at all? Just press the enter key?
That's what I tried, and it just says invalid password.
Okay. So, and it does have your username above it.
Well, I it has my name above it.
I don't know if
that's my username or not because I bought it used and I took off everything that the other guy had on it, his username and his email address and all of that.
Okay. So there are two answers, and one of them is, Foster, I'll let you describe this. I mean, it depends how much data you got on there. I mean, because this does not have a CD-ROM drive. And the only way you can be able to reload the operating system is to, when Foster found that if you power up the notebook and press and hold the zero key, that'll reload it to factory settings from the manufacturer.
You'll get the wizard that will begin that process.
But you're going to lose all the data and all the settings that are on your computer, all the photos, anything.
Okay, but how about the operating system?
When I went online, I found somebody who had exactly the same thing. He woke up one morning and suddenly it was requiring passwords of him that he had never put in there. And what their suggestion was is online you can find a factory, the user guide for the Toshiba Netbook 200 series, which is this is part of. And on page 47, it begins the process of showing you how you can get back. Now, some of the concern we have in here...
It'll restore it back to manufacturer. So if you ever upgraded this...
That's the problem. Right?
Yeah, if you upgraded it to, like you said, Windows 7 Ultimate, which these units did not ship with, you'll probably lose that Ultimate version. I mean...
Do you understand that?
Yeah. You mean the Ultra or...
Yes, the Windows 7 Ultimate you will probably lose if it goes back to the factory install, which was whatever it was when it came out, probably XP.
XP.
Now the other,
you know, that little stamp on the back of the computer, the authentic Mac, you can't make out anything that's on there. That's all worn off.
Oh, exactly. Okay. You bought a used netbook, and unfortunately...
Somebody upgraded it.
Yeah.
Right. Now, if you have access to another person's computer, what you could do on our website at internetadvisor.net, I have a link on there underneath the toolkit that talks about having bootable CDs and USB flash drives, how to create a bootable CD or USB
recovery.
And what it is one of them is Harum's bootable CD, but it also talks about Harum's bootable flash drive.
It's H-I-R-E-N, Harum's.
And what that is allows you to, it has a password cracker on there. It will allow you to erase the Windows password on the username on there so that when Windows does come up, you'll just be able to press the enter key and you'll be able to get back in. Your unique case is that you have to go through the process of going to someone else that has a desktop or a laptop computer that you can download it and then make, you have to have a 2 gigabyte flash drive and you have to read these instructions.
Right.
And then you pop it into your other computer.
So you got a lot of work ahead of you, Bert.
Or you could take it to a place like Shane's.
Well, and you're down in Ohio. You go to a little shop and see if they can help you with it there, too, as well. I'm afraid we can't take more time on it right now, Bert. But if you want to get a little more information, you can also go into our forums, which have been recently updated. Put your question in there. And we can spend some more time working on it there. So, Bert, wow. You crossed our eyes on
tough.
That one.
It would be a tough one for me.
It would be
fix.
A tough one, yeah, especially because you've got a used vehicle. It's an older used vehicle, and it's a netbook, which was very underpowered to start with.
And it was upgraded.
And it was upgraded as well. Joe from Livonia, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Got a question in regards to hotspots, and not in terms of going and using a hotspot, but the little devices that you can now purchase or rent and use with either an iPad or with a laptop. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sometimes they come on your phone. I have.
They do?
Your phone sometime can become that hotspot.
I have an iPhone 5, and it has a hotspot on it.
Yeah, but I have an Android, and it could be by Verizon, and I can make that
thing.
A hotspot.
Yeah, you could do the same thing.
And Windows phones now the question is, how secure are those, and what do you have to do to... make sure that it's always up to date, whatever, so that you can use it when you're, out and about.
Right, right. So somebody's not jumping on your hotspot while you're using it. That's your concern.
Well, not just jumping on it, but using it to access your device.
Right, exactly. Oh, right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. No.
So very, very secure. And it also tells you if somebody's on it. So whenever I use it, I turn it off when I'm not using mine. I turn it on when I want to use it. When I have my notebook, I was just flying yesterday, and when I'm sitting in the airport, I just turn on my phone and turn on the hotspot, and then I can use my computer. But it tells me I have one connected. If I were ever to see that I have two connected, I know I'm using one. I don't know who's using the other one. I'm turning it off.
Each of those should have a key. Just like a normal wireless hotspot would.
They do.
So
you
put the key in, and you don't give the key to anybody else. Yep. So
right, but that doesn't mean they can't hack it.
But you could see if they do.
Right.
All right, and but, you can tell that. I mean, is it a large logo that shows up on the screen, or what is it that
for mine,
lets you know somebody's busted?
Yeah, I can only tell you the one that I use, and it just says you have two connected. Like, right. So when my son's with me, he'll connect to my hotspot as well, and I'll have two connected. Now, right. If I have three, I know it's not our. You know, I know it's somebody else.
And my Verizon,
right, I mean,
I have a Verizon.
Are there icons on the screen that you might not notice?
No, it pops up, and it says you have one connected.
Ed, what were you going to say?
And on my Verizon, it actually says you have one connected.
Yeah, it just
and,
says
and,
that.
And if anyone attempts to connect, it'll show that person attempting to connect.
That's right.
And it'll just blink, and it doesn't. And as soon as they establish a permanent connection, it remains solid. So there's visual indicators on how many people are connected to.
But they can't.
MiFi's.
I mean, I have a pretty secure password. They'd have to really hack it quickly.
Yeah.
Which they won't be able to do because it's on and off. So Dave,
the other thing that you can do, and you mentioned about them trying to get into your computer if they had established a connection with your hotspot, and that is you can choose the type of network that it is that you're connecting to. You could choose to make that a public network, which would mean that it would have a stronger firewall. It would not normally open sharing ports. Right. You would do that like you would to make a connection in a more public place, and so it locks that network down more from a Windows perspective.
So you have both the security that's in the MiFi device, and you also have the security that's on your computer.
Correct.
Choose those kind of things. So, Joe, thank you.
Point.
Yeah, very good call.
But I think you'll be fine with it. Is the point?
Yes, exactly. All right, Vince from Lake Orion. How can we help you?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an iPad 2, and I have a Windows 7 laptop, and I don't always have access to email. And was wondering, is there a way I can connect the two based on an ad hoc type network?
Yeah.
Without adding a lot of software or.
So you have an iPad, you said?
Yeah, I have iPad 2, and I have a Windows 7 laptop.
Okay.
And I'd like to transfer PDFs back and forth or spreadsheets.
So you want to create a network that you could pass them back and forth.
An ad hoc network without a router, right? Without a router?
Right. Yeah, if I can do it straight with each other.
I've never tried
now,
that.
Now, have you used the iCloud?
Well, that's if I don't always have access to the Internet.
Okay.
So he's just talking about like a peer-to-peer connection between the two wireless devices.
I've never tried that.
And Dave, because you're nodding your head yes.
I mean, from the ad hoc network perspective, you can form an ad hoc wireless network.
Yep.
Now, what you would be able to transfer across that between the iPad and the PC would be open to how much connectivity you have on the iPad to connect to a remote device.
Right.
If you had two Windows 7 computers, as an example, and you had an ad hoc network, you would be able to put in a network name. They'd be able to see each other in the neighborhood. You know, you may not have the same sort of connectivity you would have. Again, what we've seen on the tablet devices a lot of times is they leverage the cloud, cloud storage to transfer files as opposed to normal networking.
But what he's asking about is if I'm in my home, Vince is in his home, without connection to the Internet, can he create that one? And it sounds like he can.
Well, he may be able to, or there may be like an app for that.
there may be an app for that indeed.
And I think the iCloud is the easiest way to go because it's very seldom. Do you have a situation where you don't have access to the cloud if you're wanting to transfer things back? If you do, you have to wait.
Okay, Vince, take a crack at that. And again, use our forums if you'd like to ask some more questions. I want to go back to something. This is Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Dave Sawyer from Microsoft is with us as well. Just kind of quickly, I was getting a little schooling, folks. I not only try to represent people who aren't necessarily geeks, but I aren't one by nature. And for instance, some terms came up in the last discussion that I wanted a little bit of clarity on, and maybe we can just kind of quickly. You mentioned peer-to-peer networks, Ed. What is that peer-to-peer network, basically?
Two network devices and one of them not being a server. So you can have like two laptops, two workstations, two peers of similar, you know, functionality.
Okay, and peer-to-peer would mean I wouldn't need a router to get from one computer to the other.
Correct.
Okay. If they had wireless capabilities.
Correct. Wireless or wired, you know, yeah, there wouldn't be any routers.
So you could either put an Ethernet cable between the two of them and do it that way. Or you could get to you would set up a network, a local network, you said, on one, Dave?
Yeah,
you had to press a button there.
Yep. Yeah, you would. You can go ahead and on a PC, you can establish an ad hoc network. You use this sometimes, like when you have no router, but you want to connect to your wireless printer, mm-hmm. as an example. Yes. And it's shown with a slightly different symbol, at least in Windows. It actually, you'll see it as like three little machines tied together with wires.
Okay.
So if you browse, sometimes it'll come up and say ad hoc.
And you give that a name, right?
Like, yeah, you'd give
home
it a name.
Or
and,
whatever.
And basically, it's a peer-to-peer network, and it's a small network that you would have.
Exactly.
It doesn't have as much capabilities as a router does, but it basically is there originally if you were like in a hotel room or something like yeah. that and you wanted to have two or three people talking together.
And that's slightly different than a PAN, which is a personal area network, but similar.
Okay. Now, so I was giving the example. In our house, we have my MacBook Pro and we have my wife's computer, a Dell Inspiron, which we've got Windows 8 on. And, for instance, I have a pictures on mine that I want to send to her. She has a recipe on hers I want to get across. I should be able to create a network there within our house that we can go through to see. But I have to set up sharing, don't I?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple ways to do it. As an example, I have a home server at my house, and I have an older Mac, and so I can connect to that home server and see music there. So you can use an intermediate server to mm-hmm. do that, mm-hmm. Or you can have sharing turned on and basically share something. You would then connect to that.
But you have to turn the sharing on within each one of those devices.
Well, you'd have to turn it on in one. So one would be the thing you're connecting from. Right. So you mentioned, I want to share something with her and she wants to share something for me. You could do that in having a drop point. You can think of that as we do that in the cloud today with things like SkyDrive.
Okay.
You also do it with like USB keys. But you can also have a piece of your hard drive where you'd say, you know, drop point or temporary storage.
Dropbox.
Right.
As well, guys.
Something like that, yes. That's another something like SkyDrive.
Just like SkyDrive.
But the idea is that if you wanted to do it on just your PC, you could do that. You could establish a share. You could connect to it. Home Group tries to make that easier for people in Windows.
Yes.
That was one of the big things.
Is that still in Windows 8 as well?
Yes.
Okay,
so the idea is, how do I make it easier for people to discover that other computer that's on their home network and then get to something that's on there so that they can move it back and forth?
Mm-hmm. Good. I just wanted to get back and demystify that to a certain extent. Okay, let's go back out to our callers right now and say hello to Sally from Novi. Hi, Sally. How can we help you here on the Internet Advisor?
Okay, on my laptop, Windows XP, I'm having a problem opening the links in my Outlook Express email.
If I remember right, that was a security setting in Outlook Express, and you do that. You modify that setting by, was it Internet Explorer, Foster? I think it was. If you go back, it's been so long, XP and Outlook Express, but I believe if you go under the Tools Options, there's a security setting in there. Within Outlook Express.
Outlook Express, yes.
But it may also be in Internet Explorer. I think Internet Explorer controlled the security options in Outlook Express with that with those versions, XP and Outlook Express.
Right. I mean, a lot of people getting email, getting attachments, it was a great attack vector for people who would send them stuff that they wanted them to click on and open up. And you'd say, oh, look, it's from my friend and it's a Valentine's card. I'll open that up and bam, it's not something they sent and it's infected. Yeah. So a lot of times that was disabled, and what they want you to do instead is to right click on it and then save it somewhere, which means if you're saving it on your hard drive, your virus checker should have an opportunity to scan it. Maybe you would scan it manually, or it would do it in an automatic fashion.
Right.
It was a little extra layer of protection for people who oftentimes would go, oh, I see that, I know that person, and so I'm just going to double-click on whatever they sent me, and bam, they didn't really send it.
Right.
It was something else.
Sally, do you understand what we're talking about here?
Yeah, I'm following you. However, sometimes nine out of 10 times it will not open.
Right.
And then, you know, it says, do you want to send, you know, it just won't open. And then I click the X, and then it says, do you want to send a report?
Yeah.
What type of attachment is this?
They're just, you know, just maybe a little story or maybe.
See, Sally, the concern we have here and the reason why some of these safeguards has been put in place is that I had three instances this week where somebody sent me something. Fortunately, the one, I opened it up on my Windows phone and not on my computer because I didn't look carefully at it. And sometimes they say they're a movie. Sometimes they say they're a document. But what they are is actually a means of infecting your computer. And that's why there are these safeguards so that you can't do that right away.
Oh, no. These as I know who they're from. I mean,
it's not even who, because in every one of these cases, I had to say you've been hacked because it was a friend of mine who I knew, but what was contained in the message was tainted. So I think what Dave was suggesting is if you right click on it, you can then save it to some place on your computer. And your security. Now, do you have security software on your computer?
Yes.
What are you running?
McAfee.
Okay. Good. So the McAfee should scan that automatically, or you can right-click, and many times it'll say scan with McAfee, which you should do, and then you can open that up. And the reason I asked what type of file is it is because I was trying to determine whether it was a problem that you had opening the file, or once you started to open it, maybe it was something that it was, maybe it was the application you were opening it with.
Many times, the thing is, I wouldn't know what it is if it won't open.
Well, you should see the extension on it. So it should say,
you know, extension is
story.doc or financialspreadsheet.xls for Excel file. Or manual to your dehumidifier.pdf, and you'd go, okay, I know what that is.
Or
it should open
JPEG if it's an image. Right?
Yes.
Or .mov if it's a movie or something like that.
So the idea is, and then we've had a lot of people call and say, hey, I can't open this, and it's because they had messed up their association with one particular type of program. Right. So when we asked, is it just pictures or is it just documents or is it just PDF files, that may give us a hint as well.
So I tell you what, a little homework for you, Sally. Check it out.
Okay.
And see if there are special kinds. Eddie, were you going to say something? I'm sorry.
Like I said, your antivirus software could also be preventing you from opening
those
as well. And there are things, it's not an easy fix because something could be broken. Like if you installed a different browser, or maybe you made Firefox your default browser instead of Internet Explorer. So there's commands I know that I would enter, like regmon space URL mon, and it would re-register to the Microsoft, you know, that this is the file you use for opening up hyperlinks.
We're not suggesting you do that.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting, but there are ways of fixing
Sally,
it.
Sally, one quick question.
Yeah.
Can you go on the Internet to get your mail there, like a webmail, like? Hotmail.
I still prefer Outlook Express.
I'm going to Express
more than, but I do. I can go to the Yahoo and get my mail there.
Try it there and see if you can open the images there.
Oh, okay.
That will give you some idea of whether the problem is with the programs that are trying to open this in your computer, or whether it's a problem with the images.
Oh, good point.
Okay,
good point.
Okay. Also, I did send a note to your website to the.
That's right. To the forums?
The forum, yes.
Okay.
But I must not have done it right. I have a hard time getting into your forum.
Okay, I tell you what's happened is, and this is for the rest of you folks out there, we have just changed forum forms.
Yeah, we upgraded.
Yeah,
right,
we upgraded
to the latest
it. And what's happened is that some of those older messages have not been put back on there. So here's a suggestion for you and for anybody else listening. If you try to get into the forums, you can't right now, simply go to the home page and go to the Contact Us form. And then you can put it as an email there, and we'll get back to you, okay?
Okay.
All right, Sally, thank you so much for your call. And again, folks, if you're trying to get hold of us, I'm sorry, but what happened is we've upgraded to get a better forum tool, and in the process what's happened is some of those old ones, the content is not there, and we're putting it back slowly.
Right. Well, and we knew that. When we upgraded it, and we knew that it would take us a little while to get it all back.
But we think it's be much easier to use once it is once it has all been reinstalled. But in the meantime, if you want to get hold of us, I do too.
VC Web Design is
they're doing
helping
a great,
us there.
They're doing a great job. But in the meantime, if you go to internetadvisor.net, go to the Contact Us form, then you can enter the information in there along with your email. Okay, hey, we'll be back in just a minute for Ron, Dave, and Rob, and see if we wrap the program up answering your questions at 1-800-859-0957. Well, thank you so much today for being with us on the Internet Advisor. Thanks to Jason Iameta and to Rich Lisinski behind the boards there. Thank you so much for helping out today. Our Lady of the Phones, Annie Nichols, is off today. We'll hope to have her back this coming weekend. And thank you very much, Dave. Sorry for being in here from Microsoft. Been a ball having you in here.
It's been fun being here.
We got the guru with the goodies. And Gary and Ed, of course, thank you so much for being here. The rest of you out there, please be careful wherever you're going. It is really nasty weather.
I was going to say, I feel like I'm being outclassed. I got Dave in here.
Just another gun in here helping us out. Okay, let's jump to Ron from Sterling Heights. Hi, Ron. How can we help you here on the Internet?
How you doing?
Good.
I got my old computer died about a year or so ago, and it took those, 3.5-inch floppies.
Wait a minute. You said a new... Oh, this is an old computer.
My old computer died.
It's got to be an old computer.
And I my new one doesn't have that, and now I need... Is there such a device, like you have those external hard drives that could plug in and read these floppies?
Old readers?
Oh, yes, they do.
Yeah.
Yep. And where are you at? Sterling Heights Micro Center sells them for like $15.
Yeah, a nice USB-based floppy would
be they're USB.
The way to go.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
Okay.
All right, appreciate that.
All right, thanks.
That was the easiest question we had all day.
I know, it's
love it.
Finally, one we can just
nail. He's supposed to call first.
Yeah, USB floppy drive. Bam, he was first.
All right, let's ask. Let's see if we've got that makes room for a lot more. Here, Dave. Welcome. Dave from Ann Arbor, the CEO of Wisdom and Information. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. How can we help you, Dave?
Thank you, guys. My computer wasn't running real well. It's running Windows 7, and somehow I got a blurb to install PC fixed speed, and I brought up the screen, and it said it was a Microsoft partner and da-da-da on a free scan. So I ran it, and it said I had 560 registry errors, and it's push a button, and then it says pay $29, and I felt I was getting scammed, so I went to Best Buy and bought McAfee Virus Plus. And I can't get rid of the PC fix speed.
Right.
When I run the deinstall, it says I'm missing this file.
Well, how long has this been on there? How long has this been on the computer?
The PC fix speed?
Yeah, how long has that virus been on there? Because that's what it is. It's ransomware virus.
A month?
Okay.
Well, you might be able to get by, and this is what I usually recommend to people when they get one of these, but I usually only recommend up to a week, is you do a system restore back back to the date, a couple days before you actually became infected. Then you install the antivirus software and do a complete scan. A month, though, you could. If you have a newer computer, you have enough disk space, you probably could go a month. But you have to weigh whether or not, have you installed any additional software on there?
I haven't installed anything but McAfee.
You'll have to reinstall that. What do you think, Dave? You think that might be a good course of action on
that? I think, obviously, the best thing and the thing I recommend for everybody is to go in and do a full system level backup of their machine occasionally, just so that they have a good backup of where they were. But you're right on. The idea is you can try doing a system restore back to an earlier point and then trying the virus scan at that point. You could try safe mode would be another one to see if you can get a scan going that way and see if you can get it removed.
But I would use, if you get into safe mode, I would suggest you try to get malware bytes on your machine, because that's a very good spyware antivirus.
Yeah, safe mode with networking. That way you can download the updates. Right. That's another good suggestion.
Conflict with my McAfee?
No.
Well, you're going to have to get rid of the McAfee to start with, okay? I say get rid of just... it's going to have to be reinstalled.
It's going to have to be reinstalled. You can bring up the computer in safe mode. You can have McAfee running in the the background right now. You can download Malwarebytes, which we have a link. It's at malwarebytes.org, or you can go to the internetadvisor.net website. Go to the toolkit. We have a link there to Malwarebytes. Download that utility, and it will scan and remove. More than likely, it'll completely remove that virus.
Here's a suggestion for you, though. I wouldn't waste time even trying to do it on your computer. Go to a friend's computer. Get a thumb drive, a little thumb drive.
Mm-hmm.
Put that in the USB port, and then download the Malwarebytes most current install onto that little thumb drive. Bring that back to your computer, boot up in safe mode, plug in the Malwarebytes, and run the Malwarebytes off the thumb drive.
We had the guy from Malwarebytes on last week.
Yeah, he was just
And now they offer full protection. When you're installing it here, and it's going to ask, do you wish to try the free trial of Malwarebytes for like the 30-day free trial? I would answer no, because what it's going to do, it's going to install real-time protection on your computer for 30 days, which is a good idea, but it's going to be conflicting with your McAfee that you've installed as well.
So the basic thing is
you just want to use it as a tool to remove this virus.
Yeah, Dave, we want you to get rid of this virus. So, again, go to somebody else's computer, download Malwarebytes onto a thumb drive, plug it into your computer, boot up in safe mode, and then from safe mode, run the Malwarebytes and try to get rid of the...
And then you can also consider using Microsoft Security Essentials, which is very good as far as providing protection.
Got good reviews, Dave. Very good reviews.
It did.
And in Windows 8 now, it's called Windows Defender, right?
Yeah, and it's built in, so you don't have to download it separately now.
Exactly.
And so it's included.
And you can run those both at the same time.
All right, let's try a call here from Rob from Southgate. Welcome to the Internet Advisor. Rob, how can we help you?
Yeah, I've got a Gateway computer I bought last year, about 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. And ever since I bought it, the left key has been really spongy. It kind of goes off and on, but now it's getting to the point where it drags everything with it when you move the mouse to the around the screen.
When you say the left key, you mean when you say the left key, what are you talking about?
Are you talking about on the laptop itself?
Yes, the laptop, you get the left and right key on the mouse button on the laptops.
That really sounds as a defect really from the manufacturer. You should have gotten that taken care of as soon as you bought it while it was under warranty.
It's still under warranty a year.
Yeah, I would call them.
Yeah.
Best Buy wants me to ship it and be gone for 3 weeks. That's the problem.
Well, I mean, I don't know what you can say. They're not that easy to take apart. You can take them apart, but when you're talking about the little clicks on there, the micro switches, I mean, you could just have like a little fingernail stuck underneath there and it might cause that, a fingernail clipping, or it could be, you know, something was bad right from the get-go from the manufacturing process.
Once you open it, you're going to void your warranty.
Yeah.
So you're going to probably, even though it's inconvenient to have it be gone for 3 weeks, do a backup of it before you send it away send it away and get it taken care of while you still have it under warranty.
Now, one of the things you can do with, and I've done this with people, I've had computers that the exact same problem, you could not use them. You hook up an external mouse.
Ah.
And what you do is you go in the control panel under mouse, and they tell Windows to reverse the left and right mouse button. That way you can at least start clicking.
Yeah.
So I'd be able to use external mouse then.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you can use an external mouse, but I'm saying if you want to use it as a laptop, I'm sorry, the person I was dealing with, their left mouse button was broken on their computer, but their mouse button was working just fine. So I told Windows to reverse it. That may not work with yours because yours is stuck, isn't it?
Well, it's still operative, but you got to hit right click and then it frees it up, and then you can move it around and it gives you a couple of seconds to free
maybe
it
that
up,
fix so. Will work. You tell it to reverse it, and you'll be a right mouse clicking fool.
But you should still get it fixed while you have it under warranty.
Yes,
I mean, that is, you can put it off for a while, but you'd want to get it fixed.
Yeah, you do want to take advantage of that warranty. You should.
Right,
you should
you can use a Bluetooth mouse. Get a cordless mouse. They're $20 for a Bluetooth cordless mouse or a Logitech one with a little USB nub.
Yeah, you could get them $10.
Yeah, and you can configure Windows to disable the touchpad altogether.
There you go. There you go. And you may already have wireless. I mean, you have Bluetooth on it if it's a newer computer. Yeah. Then you can just hook up your...
$10 at Big Lots.
Yeah. There you go.
I don't think it has Bluetooth, but I know what you're saying, though. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and what you do is you buy a mouse with the Bluetooth dongle in it. And you plugged it into one of the USB ports.
It costs you $10.
Yeah. Boom, you're on your way. Hey, thank you so much, all of you, for calling. And, guys, thank you so much for being here. It's been a ball. Dave, thanks again. I can't wait for the next shipload of toys to come in.
No problem. Well, it's snowing. We may as well check out some of this stuff here in studio.
Yeah, you're not going anywhere. So,
thank you, everybody, for joining us here on the Internet Advisor. On Sunday night, I'll post the podcast on our homepage, or you can subscribe to us on iTunes. In the meantime, have a great weekend, and please take care out there and be safe on the roadways. You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, the longest-running, locally-produced computer show in Detroit radio. If you'd like to find out more about our weekly show, ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit InternetAdvisor.net. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.